You are now going to listen to KAZ iBook Review with Hopeton Hick.
The specter of the Vietnam War looms large in Kyron Cecile Davison's debut novel, Sebilia Drive. Sebilia Drive centers on a young girl growing up in Central Florida with friends and neighbors whose lives are inalterably changed by the casualties of war. It is a coming-of-age novel filled with idyllic moments and heart-crushing grief. Kyron Cecile Davison is an award-winning writer and interviews editor for Newfound Journal. Kyron Cecile Davison, welcome back to KAZI Book Review.
Thank you, Hopeton. I'm glad to be back.
Kyron, I'll have to say this was a stunning debut novel. The way that you portray growing up and making that transition from on the cusp of adolescence into adolescence and young adulthood, and the way you convey the feeling, especially for those of us who grew up in the 70s and the 60s, who had fathers that went to Vietnam, I just really felt so in the novel. I felt like I was in some ways reliving my childhood. And I have to ask you, was this novel inspired by your childhood, or was there another source of inspiration for the novel?
The novel, Sebilia Drive, came from a lot of different directions, but definitely one of the main inspirational aspects of it had to do with men who were, you could call them boys, coming back from Vietnam because they were so young. I mean, they were all of 17, 18, 19 when they headed over. Sometimes they were still before the age of 20 coming back from a tour or two. And the boys that I knew who were returning, who did indeed return as men, they had this weight of silence around them that, you know, as a younger teenager, the age of 16, 17, I never even thought had to do with their experience, because they were so careful about not talking about it. And then thinking back on it, when we became, as the United States became involved in Afghanistan and Iraq, I was starting to write some new stories, and without even knowing where I was going, all of a sudden I was exploring the war that had been the backdrop to my own childhood and trying to answer in my own mind this question of what was that weighted silence all about. And so that's the heaviest part of the inspiration. Another part of it had to do with a memory as a child growing up in the 60s in a small lake town in Florida. Same idea for the setting in the novel. A friend of mine, we were all of age six. We were wandering around her lakeside neighborhood in Central Florida, through the groves, through people's backyards, doing things we shouldn't have. And we heard a woman crying out as if in pain, and then the sound of breaking glass. And of course, a six-year-old little girls, we wanted to know what that was all about. So we snuck over to the yard, and a lot of other neighbors were curious too, because it was loud and dramatic. And there was a woman standing in the middle of her carport surrounded by broken glass. She was standing there in her nightgown and looking completely distraught. And this stayed with me, and I didn't realize, you know, as a six-year-old, that it would come back and I would want to examine it. But as a writer, that was the very beginning point for this novel.
Let me jump in here real quick, because yeah, I do want to say that the character Lulu,
right,
who has this interesting reaction to her father going away from 3 years. And I don't know if this character, and she's one of the main point of view characters for the novel, was angry and a thief, a petty thief.
Right.
But tended to steal from people she knew.
Exactly. Including in the novel, the woman in her nightgown surrounded by broken glass in the driveway, Lillian Welbright, she stole one item from her.
The duck.
Yeah, the little, actually.
You have the duck?
Here's the inspiration. This little tiny sort of aqua colored bird.
Yes.
And, so it is funny how, you know, fact heads into fiction. You have these little objects that become talismans and then might enter something that you write. But that was the only piece of glass out of Lillian Welbright's entire collection of wine glasses, china, et cetera, that probably was safe because of Lulu sneaking in the house in the middle of the night and stealing.
So were you, Lulu? Yeah. I know this is all your fans who are reading this book. That's just sort of the requisite question. Which one of these are you, Rainey or are you Lulu?
Oh, that's really funny. I guess of the 2 6-year-old girls that were real, myself and a friend in Florida, she was more the Lulu and I was more the Rainey. And I suppose that could be why it was Rainey's story. It was Rainey's chapter in the end that began the novel. It was about that crazy day with the breaking glass, and then it ended up to be more not in the middle of the novel, but later in the novel. So that particular chapter.
So why don't you read an excerpt from the novel? If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Karin Cecile Davidson. We're talking about her debut novel, Sibelia Drive.
Okay. So the audience probably isn't going to have a visual of this, but the book is illustrated by a really good friend of mine, Annie Russell. It's gorgeous tropical flora of Florida and also of Vietnam, which is, the novel mostly takes place in this lake town in central Florida, but it also has background stories that happen in Vietnam. So I'll just start with the very first chapter, which is in Lulu's point of view. And the title of that chapter is Girl, October 1967. Rainey paraded down on us the year my daddy left. It was the year when daddy traded in our family car for the red and white VW bus mama took to watching Peyton Place on Tuesday evenings, and I attached the gold stars for spelling around my dresser mirror. The Beatles asked us to sit back and enjoy the show from the stereo speakers in Saul's room, and the Central Florida sun lit up the house like it was on fire. It wasn't like we didn't all know the change was coming, what with Vietnam breathing down my daddy's neck. On that October morning in 1967, daddy put on his gray-green uniform and went to war. Mama put on her zigzag mini dress and went grocery shopping at Hull's Marketessen, one of the smallest storefronts on one of the busiest streets in Santa Clara. That was where she met Rainey's mother, Ava, right in the middle of the produce section, mulling over avocados and melons. They had that dumb conversation about how to choose one. Mama chose Ava instead, dragged her past the checkout registers, right out of the door and into our lives. It wasn't like she was a replacement for my daddy. It was just one of those things Mama did, like marrying more than once or bringing home a stray cat just because it had pretty eyes. And then realizing the cat belonged to the Lindstroms around the bend. Not that Ava was a stray or anything. Of course, Rainey came with her. Straight blonde hair and these freckles that coursed across her nose like fine sand. She caught me on the upside of down. Now here was a girl I'd seen before on the school playground. The girl with the pretty dresses and the charm bracelet that jangled when she moved. She wasn't in my grade, but the one above. She shied away from me at school, but now I had her right here in my own living room. "Do you know how to play jacks?" I asked her. She cupped her hands and shook them, then lowered one in a pretend toss. "What about board games?" I pulled her into my room and showed her the boxes piled in one corner. Life, mystery date, and old chutes and ladders. She only shrugged her shoulders. you know how to play any cards? I figured she did. Of course, her answer was, go fish. But she said it more to the shag rug on my bedroom floor than to me. So I'll end there. Wow. So there's just a little bit.
Well, the book is also a lot about the friendship between Rainey and Lulu, and Rainey being the good girl who always seems to be caught in the orbit of Lulu doing something she shouldn't do. And there's a lot of, you know, you provide a very, very robust interior dialogue, and Rainey just hoping she doesn't get hit again, wondering what is Lulu doing now. And I thought this friendship between the two, I thought was just such a fascinating element. And when you think about those friendships you have growing up, you know, you can get very nostalgic about, we all have that friend that does a lot of bad things, but we continue to hang with them.
Right.
So when you were writing these stories, which to some degree is based on your own childhood, they had such emotional impact. Did they have emotional impact as you wrote them, or were you sort of keeping yourself emotionally away from the moment while you were writing these scenes that reminded you or were based on your childhood?
It's funny because I've had conversations with poets and authors about how things from our own lives filter into our writing. And only on one occasion have I ever had anybody get really upset with me and say, no, that's not true. That has nothing to do with me, but I am totally invested in the truth about that fact does filter into fiction. And while writing the characters, even though they may have been influenced by people in my past, they became completely different, absolutely their own personalities. And I became invested in giving them a complete arc, each one of them. And then also, you know, the plot arc that goes all the way through. That said, just like digging deep into who they were. And yeah, I would say, yes, I was emotionally involved in the characters, but not to the effect that it had to do with my own past. It was more about who they were becoming on the page and how they surprised me. I didn't know that Rainey would dive off the top of Alan's shoulders and then keep on diving and remembering him because of that. I didn't know that Lulu would steal. That was a complete surprise. And it came later because I wrote a lot of her chapters later. And Saul, the fact that he listens to Elton John. Not many guys I know listen to Elton John.
Wait a minute. Now, I am a huge fan of Elton John, and I was definitely listening or had the Yellow Brick Road album. Elton John's greatest hits. I love listening to Benny and the Jets.
All right. I'm so glad.
And I love Led Zeppelin, too, at the same way, and the Isley Brothers and Earth, Wind & Fire. Quite a mix for me growing up.
Yeah, I actually just put out a playlist with Large Hearted Boy. It's like a soundtrack to the album. So I definitely was listening to music when I wrote, and it influenced a lot of the characters too.
So there are many different points of view in the novel. So while we have Lulu, we have Saul, we have Rainey, who are like the main characters, really in my mind, at least Lulu and Rainey, you provide a panoramic view of the times by giving us so many different voices, like An, the young man in Vietnam, the father. We get a glimpse of Jack Walbright, who is the husband of the young lady whose son dies in Vietnam and is throwing dishes out on the road. Talk about this decision, how you crafted that. Were you always thinking this is going to be a novel with many, many points of views, or did you sort of organically it just sort of started happening?
From the very beginning, when I wrote the first, what I thought was a story that was Rainey's story, I was convinced that I was just writing a couple of stories that would be linked. And I wrote Rainey's story. I became very curious about why Lulu was so angry. So I wrote a story for Lulu, and then I wrote one for Saul, Lulu's brother, and it just kept going. And in grad school, I had a wonderful advisor, Lori Foos, who said, "Karin, do you understand that you're writing a novel? You have a lot of different viewpoints going on, but I think you're writing a novel." And she was absolutely right. And it was, as I realized what was going on and that more and more viewpoints were coming in, something that I knew editors wouldn't be happy with, because once you have more than one viewpoint, you just have to be really careful about differentiating them and negotiating between them. And I really dug my heels in and said, you know, this is a story about the home front. This is a story about wartime. And there are so many voices in war. And I really want this community to all have a say, even if it's the woman who owns the grocery store or the principal of the elementary school. Just these tiny little peripheral chapters that are very short, they all deserve some kind of say in how this novel can spin. And I did think of it as a wheel with the spokes being all of the different perspectives. So each storyline is coming out and they're all supporting each other. The hub would be perhaps Florida, the little town, Anna Clara, Florida. And then the rim on the outside, I thought of as Vietnam, because the places are also holding together the stories. So, and then a wheel turns. And so that's how the story goes forward. Anyway, that kind of helped me to keep going and feel confident about having this many voices in this novel.
Also, you didn't follow, and I speak not as an MFA graduate, but sort of a conventional timeline. So there's a lot of backstory. There's a lot of jumping back, sort of explaining it. We have one of the characters, Royal. We see him in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and what it's like being there. We have his wife, Lulu's mother, who just is not into dealing with violent men or men who were changed a lot by Vietnam, which I thought was sort of a fascinating take for many. Right. And so I just thought that, you know, with these different characters and these different voices, like you said, you're painting a whole world. You're really painting a whole world when you give all these different voices and different characters a yeah. voice, a point of view.
It's true, and I felt very strongly that it was necessary in order to tell this novel to have that many voices. So I'm just really happy that my agent and the editors at Braddock Avenue Books had enough faith in it to say, yes, this deserves to be out in the world and to help me publish it. So It was in the process of Valerie Borchardt, my agent, sending it out, it hit a lot of bumps, a lot of love, but no thank you. So it's been an interesting ride. This novel has been finished since 2015, but it took until now to find it a home. So I feel very grateful, and I'm hoping that the readers who do have it in their hands and have a chance to read it, we'll love it. So we'll see.
Well, I think the thing is, with such a large array of point of view characters, it didn't lose its emotional resonance, that you still, reading through the novel, it was still able to hold on to, in my opinion, the reader's emotions. And so it didn't lose anything from having so many characters.
That's great. That's great to hear. I love hearing that from more and more people too. So thank you, Hopeton. It's reassuring.
Well, I'll tell you what, I did ask my wife and daughter this morning as I was, we were eating breakfast together. And I said, have you read any novels that you can recall where you felt like this novel really makes me think about my childhood? And both of them said no. And my daughter, who's 14, she said, well, Dad, you should ask me that question in about 6 years.
That's great.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KZI Book Review on KZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Karen Cecile Davison. She is the author of Sibelia Drive. Now, am I pronouncing that correctly? And the second question to that is, there is a Sibelia, a Lake Sibelia in Central Florida, in Orange County, Florida.
Yes, there is.
So yes, is this, so this is not a fictional lake.
So,
or is it?
It is a real lake. It is a real lake. And I think that it is in Orange County, and it is the lake that Zora Neale Hurston has in Their Eyes Are Watching God, her novel, and in many of her stories, Lake Sibelia shows up because that was where she was from. And Winter Park, Florida is just east of Eatonville and does not share Lake Sibelia at all. However, I love the name and I love the literary connection. I have to admit that when I chose Lake Sibelia over Lake Osceola or Lake Catherine or all of the other lakes in that area, it was not as a tribute to Zora Neale Hurston, but it must have been somewhere in my unconscious because I read her so avidly when I was younger, and her writing just sort of, it's always floating in my memory. So I'm sure that was part of the reasoning of including that lake and having it so that it's, you know, the town of Anna Clara is fictional, and I set Lake Sibelia in this fictional town, even though it's a real lake. So I am mushing fact and fiction together.
Ah.
There's some other moments of it. There's in Saul's chapter, Something for Nothing, they're driving across the Halifax River from New Smyrna Beach. Well, you would be crossing the Indian River, not the Halifax. It's a little farther north you have to go.
What we call that poetic license?
I guess so.
Well, I did like the character Lyman.
Oh.
The doll. And I like that connection between the two families that this book revolves around, the Blackwoods and the Walbrights. And Lyman is the dog of Alan, the young man that put Rainey on his shoulders and was teaching her how to dive, and he dies in Vietnam. And when he dies in Vietnam, all of a sudden the dog stops hanging around the house where he lives, but starts hanging around the Blackwoods. And I thought that was interesting, that bridge between the two being the dog Lyman.
Yeah, Lyman keeps taking off. I think Lyman was a little inspired by a John Cheever story. I cannot remember the name of the story, forgive me, but there is a dog that just keeps wandering around the neighborhood, and he goes through people's rose bushes and wrecks them, and his owners are constantly out looking for him. So this is sort of a literary tribute to Cheever's dog. And because Lyman is definitely a wanderer, but he always heads to hang out with Saul. He needs another boy when Alan leaves.
And without revealing too much, there's some blossoming teen love.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah, it does get complicated. Also, I want to ask you about the name Charles Royal Blackwood III, mm-hmm. Lulu's father. Charles Royal Blackwood III, such a distinguished name.
A distinguished name for a very...
A carpenter.
Yeah, exactly. That's another a little moment of unconscious working there, like Lake Sibelia and Zora Neale Hurston. My grandmother's, I didn't realize it until I wrote out Royal's initials when I'm talking about, there's an object that's identified with him, which is his lighter, and his initials are across this lighter, and they are CRB3. So I looked at that and said, isn't that funny? Those are my grandmother's initials, Cecile Robinson Bradley, Charles Royal Blackwood. And I'm sure that was, I don't know, somehow an unconscious move of mine. But somebody asked me recently how I name my characters. And I said, you know, they just kind of come to me. I don't know how. It's almost as if they're there and they're just waiting to be put on the page, those names. So Lulu appeared, Rainey appeared, Saul, Minnie. So, yeah, I don't even remember how I came up with Charles Royal Blackwood. I might have been going through a telephone book for last names. I have a few telephone books still.
So you talked about you finished an album in 2015. It didn't get published until 2020. When did you first start writing the novel? At what point? So it started off as a series of stories. At what point did you say, I'm going to turn these stories into a novel?
It was close to the time when the United States became involved in Afghanistan and Iraq. So it was the early 2000s that I wrote the first story. And by the time I had three stories, so I'd say, I don't remember exactly, but 2004, right around there. And by the time I was in grad school, I had a handful of these stories. And with the intention of putting them into a collection, a linked collection. And the way that I was writing them, they started to overlap, and there was a lot of repetition going on. So when you cut out the repetition, you ended up with chapters. So I had a big handful, probably five or six stories, and they're 18 chapters altogether. I didn't have the peripheral characters at that point. But once I knew this would be a novel, this is in a way, a political novel. I didn't even think about that until recently. Just because it has war filtering through it and the weight of war, kind of holding it together in a way that it made sense for it to become a book filled with voices that weren't stories, that were definitely pieces of a novel.
Karin Cecile Davison, author of Sibelia Drive, thank you for being a guest on KZI Book Review.
Thank you, Hopeton, very much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. Be sure to like my Facebook page entitled KAZI Book Review, and my Twitter handle is @KAZI Books, and my Instagram handle is KAZI_book_review. Have a great day.